really warm welcome to everyone. Let's just take a few minutes to kind of settle into a posture, into a meditative atmosphere. Inviting you in your own way, in your own time, to transition from listening within to listening to the Dharma reflection this evening. So it feels quite amazing that this is the last evening talk of this retreat, and we've put up the schedule for tomorrow. Basically it's all the same up until breakfast, so you only need to check it after breakfast. Even then it's kind of pretty similar. Life goes on. And yeah, it's maybe just to kind of name it, because it might be helpful just to kind of feel into it. On the one hand, it's kind of like trying to gauge where are we on this retreat? Where to go? Maybe kind of keep climbing with the exploration of the Dharma, or is this a moment to start to turn and reflect and think, you know, how do the teachings, the practices, the all of this, you know, how do they fit for the rest of our life? Maybe we're starting to kind of turn that way, and I really feel uncertain, like which way should we go? So maybe we'll start diving up or diving down or wherever, and then we'll start spreading out into the rest of our lives. And maybe just to buy myself some time, but also because it's really in front of me, and it's literally in front of me, it's like sitting right there. I have this quote from the Karaniya Metta Sutta, and what I'll do is I'll just paste it into the chat. Let me see, actually, a second. I think I need to turn it into text first. There we go. And yeah, I don't know if this is part of the talk or not, but it's just very, very powerful. And it says, you know, as a mother would risk her life to protect her child, her only child, even so should one cultivate a limitless heart with regard to all beings. Yeah. So using this very powerful metaphor, yeah, of a mother protecting her child, her only child, that sense of that preciousness, that sense of how much energy, how much devotion, how much dedication, how you would not be steered away, right? Well, do you want to go and do some? No, I'm on this. I am cultivating a limitless heart, and I will not be deterred in any way. And so the Buddha is kind of saying, that's the kind of effort, that's the kind of energy it would be beautiful to see you bring into your metta practice. Yeah. And there's so much there. So it's just so much there that I'm actually just going to leave it there, because I feel like in a way I just wanted to share that, because it's just very beautiful, and you can go and, you know, you can search out that sutta and you can explore it yourself, or you can just contemplate that. So what does that mean? You know, particularly at times, you know, sometimes think, I think I was maybe making a bit too much effort in my practice. I think that's why it went off. You know, I was a little bit over the top. I was a little bit too dedicated. You know, maybe I just need to kind of loosen up and things like that. Yeah, sure. At times you probably do. You know, probably you do. But also, you know, there's a pretty clear indication. Yeah. Like a mother would protect her child if she thinks it's in danger, at risk, was lost from that. So I said in the first talk, maybe the talk will have like different parts, and they may connect, they may not, almost like these kind of postmodern films that have these parts and they jump around different times, different characters. I just want to say that, there's a feeling that this retreat is it's quite short in a certain way, and it's short in comparison to how we've dived into metta and emptiness with the Thovenā Sangha in the past. It's shorter than that before. So it's kind of like being ideas of like, what should this be? Like, there can be a temptation, like, oh, just keep the best bits, like a greatest hits kind of album, or just, yeah, just do the really kind of accessible bits. And on the other hand, it's like, think about what way can we develop this so that we get this full sense of the teachings, a full sense of metta, but also a full sense of emptiness. Full sense of emptiness. Now, I don't know. Is emptiness clear to us? Kind of like that was one of the intentions that someone kind of shared in the beginning, is that I want to get more clear about what this emptiness is, how seeing things as empty kind of comes into being. So I think it might be helpful if we kind of take this, that maybe we're in the second part, this is the first part of the talk, I don't know where we are, but like maybe we'll just take a little bit of time just to kind of speak a little bit about the empty qualities of metta, the empty qualities of what we've been, exploring here. So for some of you, this would be really obvious, perhaps. May also be really helpful just to kind of hear it, to frame it a certain way. Probably we'll come onto this a little bit more. We mentioned it before, but like, metta is referred to as boundless, illimitable, ever expansive. Okay, so that means I'm not going to manage to summarize it, in any more way than you can summarize the moon or something like that. It's like, oh yeah, it's this thing in the sky. No, it's not a thing in the sky. It's way more than that. It's different than that. So we'll point at it, we'll describe it, we'll talk about it, but we're not going to complete this in any way. Remains open, expansive. So we've actually practiced metta on this retreat in quite a number of ways. Okay, so on that very first evening, we kind of settled, calmed, and then we started to bring in a being and phrases into that first meditation. So the being, the phrases, that's quite a common way that we know metta as a metta practice. But you may also say that very first part, calming, soothing, easing the being, that steadying the attention, those are all acts of kindness, right? They all bring us into a little bit more well-being. They all start to open the capacity of the heart to start to head in that direction, like the Buddha was saying, get limitless. Let's get limitless in relationship to all beings. Now, you may sometimes be sending metta to all beings, and you notice, oh, I've actually forgotten some beings. And sometimes one of the beings we forget is ourselves. So, oh, I'm sending it everywhere, it's going everywhere. And also me, and it kind of changes something some of the times if we notice we've forgotten that. So we start with ourselves, we lead to others, we're limitless in terms of how many beings and which beings we're including. And is there a limit to the beings that we want to send metta to? So I hear about another kind of being or a different sense of this kind of being. Maybe trees are beings for us, and they also can send metta to them. Other things might be beings for us. Sensations might be beings for us. In a certain sense, we extend it to there. So we have the practice as phrases, two beings. We can also have it as we did in the first morning instruction, as a sense of welcoming. Welcoming whatever's here, whatever sound, whatever sensation, whatever appearance, even the distractions, they're welcomed to be here. And they're also released. And kind of extended that as we dived further into the insight that everything is in constant, dynamic, changing, shifting, subtler than it first appears, and right down deep into that, kind of moving in that sense of welcoming, what more deeply can be welcomed. And then today, like noticing that we can have the intention behind our practice to release contraction. That's actually metta in there for me. I see it as metta, that it's that intention that wishes to release contraction. Because what happens when we release contraction? The heart opens, it starts to become more limitless, and we really can be really dedicated, really devoted to that movement, that expansion. And the intention itself is metta, yeah? And the practice, when we are doing it, that's releasing that contraction, the actual act of that release is also metta. It's also opening something, yeah? And we can work in this range, like firstly, maybe we open contraction in the body, open contraction in the heart, open contraction in the mind, open contraction in awareness. So once again, more and more things are welcomed to arise, remain, pass. Yeah, so all of it could be said to be a metta practice. We could also say that it's a samadhi practice. It's a gathering into well-being, it's all of these kind of things. And equally, we can say that it's an insightful practice, right? Because it's revealing the empty nature of appearances. Okay, so it brings that sense. You can interpret this in many, many ways. So I'm choosing to interpret it at this moment as metta, but in a moment I think we'll shift and we'll start to see, okay, so this is actually emptiness. This is actually emptiness that we're practicing. Yeah. When the Buddha talks in the Four Noble Truths, about this co-arising of tanha and dukkha, and tanha is this push-pull on experience, get it, get rid of it, demanding to get it my way, inflates this sense of self, inflates this sense of dukkha. Yeah. When we practice metta, I think Zaha spoke about this yesterday probably, is like when we practice metta, we're replacing that tanha, push-pull, get for myself into something more wholesome, something that opens out, something that welcomes, something that allows, something that moves with experience. And so we're expressing freedom through this. We're expressing an insightful understanding in the way that we do our practice. So as metta replaces tanha, brings a sense of freedom, what we get to see is this moment is not fixed. It's not fixed. It's not only one way. There are different ways for it to unfold, different ways for it to express. And so what we would say there is that this moment is empty of being dukkha. It's empty of needing to be pushing and pulling. It has a potential to be a different way. Yeah. So just like metta, emptiness is very hard to put into words, but it's not impossible. We can point towards these things. And sometimes, the words we have, like empty, may not really help to express what we wish to hear. I kind of imagine bursting into the living room of the people living just down there. I could burst in and say, "Liberation is empty." Come on, come on, come on. Come and listen to this talk. It's like, I'll walk out. I probably have to walk back in there. And it's like, come on, you're looking at your screens. People, come on. Liberation, it's empty. It's empty. Come and hear some of this stuff. Yeah. You're coming on what? And they probably wouldn't come. It doesn't sound particularly appealing. Oh, right, empty. Yeah. Well, when you filled it up, call us back again, Whatever. It needs to be something more. So there is more that we can say. And there are different ways of expressing this. And in a way, we have been expressing it, but maybe not being so clear that this is empty. This is empty. What does it mean? So we see that, metta itself has many ways, many forms, many shapes, as many as we can conceive tonight, that really fit in well within a sense of experience that could be endlessly deep, endlessly interwoven. Yeah, the way things lean in upon each other, the way things can expand and extend into maybe like all areas of our lives, all dimensions of our creativity, our study, our relationships, all kinds of ways in which we wish to awaken, or qualities that we wish to awaken. And really, I think it kind of leads us beyond what might be kind of normally accessible heart qualities, like kindness, like generosity, like care, or consideration, or selflessness. Yeah, we kind of have a sense of those things. They're not alien to us. It's like, oh, I've never heard about that. I've never heard about caring. I've never heard about, not putting myself first. But do you have a sense that each of those could actually be this kind of endless exploration, or an endless exploration, expression of metta? Yeah. To be considerate. I think, so we take consideration. Yeah, we love to be considered when someone else is making decisions that are going to affect us. Yeah, so oh, I was taken into consideration. So when I'm deciding what to do, I'm considering you. So it's like, so whatever, I've decided I'm going to give a talk. It's going to be this long, and I'm trying to be considerate to your needs. Now, in that decision, I could prioritize me. Yeah, what I want, what I desire, what I need. Yeah, it's like, then we would probably end up with a pretty terrible talk. But who knows? We might all just share the same thing. Or I could really consider you. Your wants, your desires, your needs, and mine are kind of more in the background. Well, there could be a possibility that I frame and I purposefully kind of extend the way that I look at this experience. Think of it like the us. Only those kind of needs, wants, and desires that we share, that we have in common, that are ours, in some way shared. Starting to root into something, it feels to me we're going deeper and deeper in a sense of like, okay, what we can consider. We could actually start to consider something more subtle, yeah, that relationship between us. What is that relationship between us? It's kind of like a third entity in any connection. Yeah. And it could be imagined to exist with its own particulars of a person. The relationship between us has its own wants, has its own desires, has its own needs. We could start to support that, whatever that might look like. Yeah. Or we might take this opportunity to kind of talk about something. It's not what you or I or even the relationship wants and needs. Maybe it's what the world, as we sense it in this moment. Yeah. What does the world need to hear right now? Maybe that's what we'll talk about. What does the world need to hear? And that could motivate us, that could decide what we do. So when we talk about consideration, we see, ah, oh, there's so many ways in which to explore this. So many ways to hold and frame an inquiry, a question there. Or we could even think, it's not for the world, it's actually for something profound, something kind of transcendent, something that we can maybe taste, put into words like love, or peace. Yeah. Which may be what the world wants, maybe not. Maybe it's something beyond, something beauty, whatever else it might be. Yeah. And each of these ways, something seems to be expanding in my sense of it. Something's perhaps getting subtler. Something's needing a deeper quality of listening. Yeah. So we're encouraged in this exploration to go beyond, what might be our biological drives, our cultural norms, our normal ways of conceiving of a self, of another, of a world, of what is of value. And then coming, this thread comes straight back into these Four Noble Truths, and what actually brings happiness? What actually brings happiness? Yeah. So Buddha was very helpful. You know, he's basically saying getting rid of things is the tanha trap, yeah, the demanding trap. Right? You get sucked into this vortex and you're just in this thing. The only way out of it is to get something or get rid of something, which actually just makes the binding tighter. And yeah, this dukkha in this moment and over time. Yeah, we know what it's like to be in there. But we also have these other qualities, this appreciative joy, this healing, or you know, being willing to meet the painful in the world and offer something soothing, maybe even healing, towards that. Yeah. And of course, this letting go of tanha and bringing in that sense of welcoming, or metta, also available for us. So there's always other possibilities. So this moment is empty and it's pregnant with possibilities. Yeah. So it's empty of being a certain way. Yeah. One of the, I remember Lee Brasington, I've heard him kind of referring to this as a corelessness. You know, like an onion, you peel off those layers, peel off, peel off, peel off, and like in the very heart of that onion is just no more onion. This kind of corelessness of the experience. But what it also speaks to is this kind of pregnant with possibilities for peace and harmony. No moment can be entirely distanced from it. And of course, all of those qualities together, appreciative joy, soothing, meeting pain with an open heart, peace and harmony, and the welcoming, those Brahma Viharas. So I spoke about those last night. Modes of behavior that change the world, yeah, to be more and more heavenly. Literally what that means, yeah. Brahma Vihara. Yeah, they are gateways, invitations, modes that actually make experience more heavenly. And with that, of course, makes the beings within it just a little bit more angelic, yeah, in some ways, including us. Yeah, transcend something limited, yeah, as we enter something unlimited. So hopefully it's kind of clear that the way in which we approach the path shapes the path. The way in which we approach the path shapes the path. Okay, so the path doesn't get to exist on its own side and say, are you on the path or off the path? As if the path was there, a thing that we don't actually create through the way that we approach it, through the way that we walk it. Yeah. We have this wonderful metaphor, we kind of just mentioned it, I think, when we were exploring anicca and metta on that morning, I might call the second morning. You know, we look at our path, look at that path. You know, somehow I can see, just before I walk it, there's a path across my living room, yeah, and then I walk on it. And then I can turn around and say, hi, where's it gone? And then it reappears. Yeah, in the same way, the Dharma path appears through the walking of it, through the intention to walk it. And in that way, we see it's empty. Yeah. So I just want to take a little bit of time to see, okay, what does that mean? What, maybe even like, why that word? Why that word may still kind of be lingering around. Have we still not got a better word to say that something is empty? We could say it's not fixed. We could say that it's free to be expressed in other ways. So this moment is free to be expressed in other ways. Yeah. Open-ended in its possibilities. So that we can encourage this moment to be meaningful for us. Yeah. And even the principles, the things that feel normally quite meaningful for us, are also empty. How do we feel about that? Say kindness. Kindness, even kindness is empty. Yeah. Our sense of self, sense of who we are, sense that we've cultivated into whatever condition it is empty. Everyone we love, everything we appreciate is empty. Right? And so clearly, we're not meaning empty as something dismissive. Yeah, it shouldn't feel, oh, well, okay, so I'm not going to bother being kind anymore. I'm not going to bother respecting myself or others or, you know, all of that. So we're actually saying something radical, like regarding something as not really real, does not demean, but can actually unbound the limits. Yeah. So this kind of reality question. I feel a little bit uneasy at first, but let's just be clear. We're not, we never say something's not real. Yeah? We actually say it's neither real nor not real. Now that might seem like a poor compensation. I want things to be real. I want the world to be real. I came here for reality, and you know, you will not take it away from me. No matter, even if you have that good guy Buddha who seems like a nice guy, and the Dalai Lama, he seems all right, but I'm not sure, you know. So I want things to be real. So we can just take a moment and just consider, you know, that what appears to us appears in consciousness. Everything that we know is appearing in consciousness. And it really depends. It really depends on the state of the heart, state of the mind, the state even of the body. Yeah. And the way that the heart, the mind, the body is felt alongside that experience, that phenomena, that appearance, yeah, in that moment of consciousness, you know, as it appears in consciousness or appears to consciousness. I don't know, I've never met a consciousness. I don't really know what they do with things, but they kind of, is it in consciousness or is it to consciousness that appearances come? Well, you can work it out. Can we know how something really is if changing the state of the heart, changing the state of the mind, changing the shape, the condition, the felt sense of the body changes how that something appears? Yeah? I'll kind of come back to that in a moment. But, you know, let's just have a quick little look at how the heart, mind, body co-create each other's state. Yeah, because this is a really helpful kind of teaching because it's practical. Gives us practical entryways. Yeah? Almost anyone can change the posture of their body at any time. Yeah? There's some, I don't know, fortunate, unfortunate beings who can't do that and have probably found more incredible creative ways for shaping their experience. I'm just noticing on the Zoom window here, quite a few people changing their postures. It's like, oh, change the posture? Okay, I'm ready. I'm getting into attention mode. Whatever it is. I'm getting into relaxed mode. So we do it. We do it all the time anyway. You know, kind of, if we hadn't drawn so much attention to it, you can kind of say to people at a certain point, like, do you remember putting your hand there? It's like, how did it end up over there? It's like the body moves itself in a response to the conditions that it feels would be appropriate and supportive, perhaps to the heart mind, perhaps to the consciousness, perhaps to what we're hearing. Yeah. So the body has a mind of its own, has a life of its own. But it's also really important that we get to explore the state of our experience, you know, the state of our consciousness, state of our hearts, state of our minds, conditions of our body, because it really is important, because that moment of perception, right, that moment of perceiving something, the moment that is of an appearance being in consciousness, which is the basic description of experience. Yeah, you're having an experience, there is some appearance in consciousness of something. Yeah. Oh, I had a massive experience where there was nothing there. So that was a big sense of nothing, perception of nothing in consciousness at that time. Or I was really, really angry and annoyed about this person because of the way they slurp their food. And it's like, yeah, so that was where the attention was, and it had all these flavours and, you know, not the soup, the experience had that kind of flavour of anger and all that. Yeah, that all of those were perceptions, moment by moment, over time. It's important because the state of the heart and mind really shapes what we will conceive, yeah, what we will understand, what we will imagine to be there. And what we imagine to be there, what we interpret as being there, really will shape our perception. What we tend to see, what we tend to filter into experience, what we tend to focus on, the way that we focus on it. Yeah. So the state shapes the conception, the conceptual mind, what we think things are, and that shapes what we then perceive, and that perception is the experience. That perception shapes experience, is experience. Kind of one and the same. And the state is never static. State of the heart, mind, state of the body, you see, you're constantly in flow. It's impermanent, it's inconstant, but it's also changeable. Yeah, it's also something we can develop, something we can change. It's not like, oh, it's all just out of control and you just get what you get, like you roll a dice. No, we can play with it, we can change things. Actually, keeping the state the same is the really hard work. Yeah. It's kind of, it's like walking on a tightrope compared to lying down. It's like, lie down, you can change your state. Walk on a tightrope? You're kidding me? Keep the state in a steady state, not changing in any possible way. Okay, but don't worry, we're not needing to do that, at least not at this moment. So, do people feel okay? Do we need to explain that the body changes the heart, the mind? Is it worth exploring that in any way? Should I explain that or not? Would that be helpful? Do it? Okay. So let's use our imagination just for a moment. We'll only take a couple of minutes with this. Can you imagine, let's picture a person walking into the room now, walking into your room. Yeah, just walking into the room, and this person, you need a little bit of backstory here, they're in a sad, distressed, really kind of troubled state. Yeah. So you can kind of see how they walk into the room, how they look around, how they act. Yeah. Okay. Now, maybe another person's going to come in now, or maybe it's the same person, they've just popped out, they've just gotten a message, they realize there's actually nothing to worry about, you know, nothing to be concerned about. It was a false alarm, everything's fine, they're going to get better, whatever it is, you know, and then they're going to walk in again, that relief of tension. They're actually really quite joyful about this kind of change in their circumstances, right? So we could say the mind and the heart has shaped the body. Right? It can't help but kind of express itself in the way that we hold the body. Yeah? So we say, therefore, the body is empty of existing in its own way, from its own side. Yeah? It's shaped, its appearance is shaped by the heart and the mind. That's what we mean by empty. Yeah? Something that does not have an independent existence. It's shaped, it's shapeable. But interestingly, it's also shaping. Yeah, it's also affecting the heart and the mind. When the body is that way, it actually reinforces that message. Yeah. So another word for this is it's fabricated. It's made. It's made to be this way. The body is also made up of other parts of the body, yeah, which is meaning that the body itself is made of different things which are not just the body, the hands, the arms, the legs, things like that. Fabricated together from parts, aggregated is another word you'll find in the Dharma for this. But it's also made up by the quality of the heart-mind knowing process in this moment. Yeah, what we conceive the body to be. Yeah, we can see the body as physicality. You know, I don't know if anyone's ever done these. Well, I know some of you will have done it. This elements meditation where you see the earthiness of the body. And as you pay attention to how earthy the bones in the body, and you start pay attention more and more to the bones, those heavy, heavy bones in the body, I actually feel my body getting heavier. It's almost, I would imagine if I was sitting on a scale, it's like gone up a kilo at least. You know, it's like, oh, heavy, heavy body. And then I remember actually, every atom anywhere is barely here at all. You know, it's like a dust, speck of dust in a huge, giant cathedral. That's how much matter there is in any of these things. I remind myself of that, and it's suddenly I'm amazed that my body will actually stay on a chair. It's not just floating off out of the room. And you see that kind of conception of body, if you basically a very suggestible person, you know, you'd be easily hypnotized, and you've probably bought loads and loads of things from adverts on daytime TV. And fantastic kitchen slices, amazing, you can make chips just brushing your hands across this thing? Anyway, my own personal issues around that aside, you see that the heart mind knowing process in this moment shapes the conception of what a body is. Yeah. So the body really is shaped by the heart and mind. But in meditation, we can work the other way. And actually, of course, that's something that we do. We can breathe deeper, use the body, breathe deeper to calm and soothe our experience. Yeah, so we like start to shape into the body, or we can kind of deeply relax through the body and just think, oh, everything can unwind, everything can be allowed here. Like softening out that belly, letting the face muscles relax, not making the concentration or constipation kind of face. It's like, oh, encourages a sense of peacefulness in the heart and the mind. So we see that they're actually having this conversation here. And we can do that, and we should probably do that, by exploring different postures at different times. You know, when there's, a lot of tension, we're trying to control our experience, lying down, surrendering, really just letting go of that sense of needing to be in control, needing to fix, needing to perfect. Really helpful posture for us to release. You know, or if there's times where we really feel like I need to feel more empowered, I need to feel more driven, I need to feel more bright, I need to feel like that mother looking after its only child, you know, it's like, okay, I need that. Maybe standing up is part of what does that. Yeah, encourages the presence, the power in our posture. But we're talking about this for more or less kind of the insight of seeing that all of these things are empty. Seeing that all of these things are empty. Yeah. Fabricated by subtle qualities of heart and mind. Yeah. Because we can change the posture of the body, yeah? But actually, it's how the body is perceived in the heart-mind-conscious moment of attention that's actually shaping the whole process, yeah? And so if you want to shape this in a more subtle way, we can actually feel, imagine, moving the form. Yeah? You can kind of sit here subtly, feel yourself stand up without standing up. You may be able to get similar kind of replicable effects within this moment, feeling a sense of empowerment coming into the being, and you know, again, it's almost like feeling myself being pulled up and out. It's like something coming alive because we imagine that we feel it. We feel, imagine. It feels kind of pretty close to describing this type of experience, and it allows for whatever we feel. Yeah, whether it's in, you know, so-called physical reality or in this kind of subtle imagining or even a subtle state, yeah, it's only imagined to be what is really real. Yeah, we take it as real, take it as meaningful, take it as significant, and it shapes our experience. Yeah. And so metta also works in this way. Yeah? It also fabricates. It's also fabricated. Yeah? It shapes and it's shaping. The interesting thing about it is that, you know, it's not like all things are fabricated equal. Yeah? In a certain sense, we would say metta is less fabricated than our usual state of heart and mind. Heart, mind, knowing of the world, yeah, conceiving of the world. And so in many ways, when we practice it, you may find that the body is soothed. You may find when there's a lot of metta flowing away, maybe even the body fades from prominence. Yeah, it just becomes very, very quiet. It doesn't feel like it needs to make a big appearance there. It just softens, soothes, disappears. Somewhere in that range, yeah, it just goes a little bit quieter, maybe, would be the easiest way of saying. And that range extends right down to disappearing completely in a non-problematic way. Yeah. The troubles or worries that we have can kind of fade when there's a lot of metta. I'm really concerned about a lot of stuff, but it's actually just fading away from being, not that it becomes unimportant, or it's not that I don't want to do something about it. It's just that in that kind of field of metta, things are fading away. Yeah? So here we're talking about what we might refer to as the state of metta, like where metta is really, really present. At other times we'll talk about the practice of metta. And this is another area where metta itself is empty. It depends on the way that we relate to it. The demands, of course, for this or for that, the unskillful ways that we seek, you know, a happy state, they also fade. Right? Partly because metta feels good. Yeah? When metta's here, we're feeling pretty good. Right? It's a feeling that we're wishing well for others, but it also supports us, a more open heart, all of that feels good. And also because metta is more subtle than that. So by experiencing a lot of metta, we've actually entered something more subtle. And in a more subtle mode, everything's gone quieter. The sense of self has gone quieter. The sense of time has gone quieter. The sense of world has gone quieter. The sense of what's important for a human being to do has gone quieter. It's become more subtle. So we were saying earlier that metta is like a replacement for tanha, but we're also seeing that metta then actually diminishes the urge to engage with tanha. And this is one of those examples where, you know, so what is it? What is it? Which one is it? And what it wishes to be, what it actually acts as, is endless. And endlessly dissolving appearances, or endlessly opening the heart to have more concern for more and more. It can be all of those things. And so another way of saying this is to say, at certain times, our sense of self, our sense of who we are, sense of what's important to us, also goes more quiet in meditation. Yeah? The self that feels itself to be the body, the heart, the mind, maybe it doesn't identify with those things so much. You know, they just become, you know, something that just flows through, just happening. You know, what we knew as our body, that sense of it as solidity and everything, it's kind of dissolved into something soft, energetic, that will disappear completely. You know, our prior preferences, what's important to us, feels less pressing to support or dive into and encourage, and even the thought patterns, you know, become less habitual. All of those things that we could normally kind of define ourselves by. Changing, yeah? So that sense of who I am is changing, or becoming more quiet, or extending its range. So we see, the sense of self is itself empty. Empty of existing a certain way. Yeah? If metta can change how we feel so deeply, and you know, if it couldn't change things, why would we do it? Like, why would we do metta practice if it was like, it doesn't do anything? And for some people, maybe it doesn't. Yeah? Who, what, how? I don't know how to phrase this. What are we? What are we? What is this? Yeah? It's kind of like a philosophical point. It has no answer. It's just to wonder. To wonder, if we're so changed by practicing, cultivating, tuning into something, that we feel so different and we recognize it, really good understanding, okay, things are not fixed, they're not a certain way, it's open to be different, yeah? This becomes a practical point. Can metta lead my sense of self to be more flexible in a really healthy, a really helpful way for living my life more fully? Now, does metta speak to me as something that expresses something very, very beautiful? Yeah. And so because we're speaking about this kind of fluidity, flexibility, softening, quietening of the sense of self as expressions of metta, also expressions of liberation, maybe worth just touching on this kind of anatta teaching that is there. So anatta is a really skillful way of looking and regarding our experience, which is deeply in tune with metta. Yeah? It's a way of looking at our experience with a lot of metta at times, yeah? And I think that's really helpful for that. that also brings a lot of metta, and a sense of very open freedom, right? It's not like some revelation of some fact of existence. You don't have a self. It's not saying something like that. That would really be, in what I can hear, the antithesis, the opposite of what the Buddha said. He would say, keep from the extremes. Keep from the extremes. But we just love the extremes. We can't resist. It's like, I have a self. I don't have a self. It's like, those are extremes. There's something in the middle. There's something in the middle. Neither self nor not self. Neither real nor not real. And metta is one way that can lead us here. And it leads onwards from here also. To say, oh, I've brought you to this understanding and bye, I'm going now. It continues to grow, expand, delight. Metta's insightful. See how it reveals to us the most beautiful, most sublime aspects of the teachings. What more can it do? It also supports samadhi, it supports that gathering together of the parts of us which don't tend to hang out together but can be friends, can become unified, gathered, harmonized. Metta can be part of that relational quality between us and other things that also brings us together with a kind of common, shared mission, drive, goal. And of course, it is a beautiful way to then relate to the world, that appears empty, full of potential to be different things. Every experience we experience is empty. And maybe a few drops of metta, maybe a big load of metta into there is what's going to be really helpful for us. So whether the world appears empty or whether the world appears fixed, maybe metta is the right ingredient. And whether it appears fixed, empty, or neither, maybe it's still the right ingredient. We have the possibility for continuously reimagining what kindness means, what welcoming means, what friendship means. At times, metta is going to want to come through, something really soft, really malleable, meeting the really kind of obvious needs of the world or those around us. And it's like, yeah, I'm willing to do that. Maybe we remember, just as a mother and their only child. Yeah, with real dedication, it's awkward, it's difficult, it's beyond my normal range, but I'll try it and see what happens. And sometimes it might take a different shape, it might be to be stern, to hold firm, that metta wants to express in this way. Or maybe rather than supporting the obvious needs, it really wants to lean into the less obvious concerns. Something that takes imagination or faith or intuition to go beyond, I don't know what's, I can't see it, I can't sense it, but maybe this, maybe this. Take a risk, take a dance. So what metta is, what it's for, how we relate to it, will always be wider. Wider than the words we can use to describe, wider than any kind of metaphors or anything else. So we're not saying tonight all of what we can say of what metta can be. It will always go beyond. Always go beyond what we can think it is, imagine it is, where it can go, what it can do. It's not to say nothing, but also not to curtail, to bring to a close, just in what we can conceive right now. Intentionally referred to as something inconceivable, illimitable. And so it comes this question, okay, so how does this fit in within my practice? What's the goal of a Dharma life? What is the understanding we need to understand? And I think for me, certainly within the goal or goals of a Dharma life, I feel like metta, for me, takes a big part of that. It's not the only way the heart can express. Yeah. It may not be the entirety of what brings fulfillment for a human being, but I think it's going to be one of the characters in that. Sometimes an expression of our awakening, sometimes a footstep on our path of awakening. Sometimes something that gets our energy going, starts the wheel turning, and starts to show things aren't always what they appear to be. Things are not fixed. Things are more open. Much, much more is possible than it first appears. So let's just have a quiet minute together to close this evening's reflection. Beings of the world experience the deep freedom of a heart of metta, the overcomer of fear, the opener of love, the dissolver of troubles, the harmonizer, peace bringer. May all beings be deeply free in every possible way. Thank you for your presence, your participation in this co-creation, and wish you well with your practice. Take half an hour now for walking, come back for the last sitting of the day.